August 8th, 2009. I'm glad to hear that applause, although it was for the music, but we're very glad to have everyone with us again for our weekly program, which is Saturdays from 3 to 4 Eastern Time. And today our discussion takes place 1 week after Mr. LaRouche gave an international webcast August 1st. I encourage everyone to look on the Political Action Committee carrying that, the LaRouchePAC.com, because at that time, and in fact, at several relevant points recently, Mr. LaRouche said we should declare the Federal Reserve System bankrupt and establish the Third National Bank. Now, that's going to be the focus of our discussion today. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. I'm very glad to have on the telephone line live with us from here offsite in Virginia near the studio, Michael Kirsch. Welcome, Michael.
Good day.
And Michael is with the LaRouche Political Action Committee, with the LaRouche Youth Movement, and especially with the Basement Project for what, Michael, at least 2.5 years. And well, let me say, I'm thinking of 2.5 years because I know that's the time period in which you've done intensive work on the principles involved in the unique American system of a credit system, and especially the legacy of the patriot Alexander Hamilton. So that's why we're especially glad to have Michael here. And I'm going to say at the outset, when we posted Michael Kirsch as our guest today several days ago, and we've received some questions in advance, which during the show we will ask, and if there are any more live questions, please go ahead and send them in. But we didn't know at that time that also our next issue of the Executive Intelligence Review, which will be posted electronically for EIR online around August 10th, and will be dated next Friday, is going to have a very full section on Alexander Hamilton. It's going to have LaRouche's August 1st specific comments about how the Federal Reserve System is bankrupt, how to have a third national bank, and it's going to have the transcripts of three LPAC, LaRouche Political Action Committee videos, which I recommend everyone look at, as again, on the LaRouchePAC.com, that are on the history, the principles, and so forth involved in a real credit system. You can go on LaRouchePAC.com. You can see the special section of the very urgent campaign, if you want to call it that, for a new global credit system. Just click on that and go to town. So now back to what we're dealing with here. Just since in the last week, although I'm not confining it to that, there has been all hell breaking loose across the United States. I again remember Mr. LaRouche August 1st saying, watch out, it's all there, it's going to happen, you're going to see town hell meetings. He didn't use that expression, but when people from the House of Representatives went back to their districts this week, that's what they found, because the Congress of the United States, now by the way, the Senate's going back as of this weekend to their home states, the Congress of the United States has been going along with the presidency, which has threatened the very existence of the population as a whole. Instead of making arrangements, as we are going to be discussing, to have bankruptcy reorganization of the collapsed financial system in the United States and work with friends of the United States abroad, the Obama administration, with the congressional connivance, is out to selectively kill off people, kill off old people, kill off what they don't use the word defectives, but they spell it out. That's what they're up to, and that there is an outrage taking place that amounts to a revolutionary mood. So we are at, it's even understating it to call it a turning point period. And Michael Kirsch has been part of the team to, as I just said, post the kind of materials, written and video and so forth, of concepts and lessons from history and everything that people need, because we're either going to have doom or we're going to be able to turn the situation around. Now, Michael, let me just mention one thing and then turn it over you to kick off the discussion, because I want to refer people. I mentioned Alexander Hamilton, and I'll just point out to many of our loyal participants in this show, may remember that a couple years ago, 2007, and it was in January that Alexander Hamilton's 250th birth, right, Michael, was observed. January 11th might be his birthday. I might have that wrong, but
That's right.
you wrote a piece that was addressed to Congress. We published it in EIR. I'll tell everyone it's February 9th, 2007. Go to LaRouchePub.com, on which you're listening right now. But the title of that, I think, written by Michael Kirsch, was let's see, Hamilton counsels Congress, rediscover your powers. And Michael, you can get into that what are constitutional powers, I suppose, is one way to look at it. But it was an open Dear Congress letter from our guest today. It circulated all over Washington. And you know, within about 5 months, the whole world financial system blew up. You might not have known the timing at the time you wrote the Dear Congress letter, but it was July 2007. Mr. LaRouche, at an international webcast at the time, said the jig is up, the party's over, it's blown, here's what to do. And he got, in the Hamiltonian tradition, very specific. Within weeks, he had put out a draft action that Congress could and should have taken up, called the Homeowners Bank and Protection Act, to deal with the banking system, the dispossession of foreclosures of home mortgages, and it was all on these principles. So, with that being said, Michael, why don't you either might want to start by returning to what you told Congress at the time, or from, I understand you spoke with Mr. LaRouche directly today, to give people an even more of a picture of what we already know, unless you're living under a rock, is the mood of the country.
Yeah, I think that's a fine plan and necessity for what we're facing. We have, on the one hand, we have this crisis that everybody is confronted with, which is now an all-consuming social dynamic. And one of the challenges facing everybody listening on the show is how to address that social dynamic and use it to the benefit of what we want to accomplish. And this, which is the solution that we'll be discussing today. And the other thing that we have to discuss in the introduction here is that we are addressing largely this discussion and to those who will play a role in bringing the presidency in the wings, if you will, to the fore, which Lyndon LaRouche has been in an ongoing dialogue in his recent webcast with, and has preparing the leadership and the people that have not been completely discredited by toeing the line with the Obama administration, as now a growing number of congressmen are around the country. They will be the ones then to come forward and take charge in this crisis and give people back a real job, give people back their health care, give people back a future, and give people back what they've just been robbed of in the recent period, with the bailout of some $20 trillion and bailing out London and Wall Street, a bailout which had no reason to exist. So this discussion is largely oriented towards creating that which everybody on the, listening on the show should be and can be a part of bringing to the fore. So first of all, addressing this social dynamic, we have the terminology that Lyndon LaRouche made today in discussion with some associates was mass strike. And we're facing a world which is completely different, and history has now changed. And you have to deal with the fact that you are living in a country right now which is inhabited with certain organisms called congressmen who are crawling into holes, at any holes they can find, to avoid the raging population. Because the congressmen thought they had to be faithful to the president. And we're going around the country or from Washington, D.C., and we're introducing the icy hand of death to their constituents. And they were saying, "Here, let me introduce you to someone." And the constituent was looking there, and out of the darkness stepped forward the Grim Reaper in the form of Obama's health care plan, and has now been downing on the population Since Lyndon LaRouche first brought the issue to the fore in April, and then through the month of April and June, as we had been documented, the modeled copy healthcare plan of Adolf Hitler as the basis for Obama's, that this is actually what the people are facing. And people are now, as you can see, anybody who gets online or on TV, I'm not sure if it's being covered there, but you'll see around the country raging anger of people because they're realizing that the President of the United States and the congressmen are actually making themselves their personal enemy, and that we're facing a situation which is different than anything we've had in many years, where politics was largely people coming together for their issue, and people coming together at meetings to try to discuss their issue, and people getting angry about their issue. But what we're seeing is not that. We're seeing now something completely different, which is people coming together because they're realizing that the President of the United States and the Congress are actually their personal enemy, and they're creating a program which represents their doom. And so this is a completely engulfing situation where the President of the United States and the congressmen are crawling into holes, going into hiding. And apparently the President of the United States is going off somewhere.
Yeah, Michael, what I heard is that there was to be a whole sequence of town meetings. By the way, one yesterday, August 7th, here in Virginia. Instead of that taking place, most all of them have been canceled. Yesterday, the president instead had a speech off his teleprompter in the safety of the Rose Garden, and Bozeman, Montana is canceled. A whole sequence is canceled.
In Bozeman, Montana, a congresswoman apparently delivered the speech of citing the material. Citing the kind of material that we've been putting out, exposing Ezekiel Emanuel for his whether you're useful for the state type policies.
Right, so I think the president is saying he's going to take a family vacation instead somewhere out west and then Cape Cod.
Right.
So I think what the red hot factor is at play there behind the scenes. Well, I mean, it's obvious, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so the question is for us to discuss is now, since we're in a completely changed historical situation, where now you have a president going into hiding who is about to campaign around the country for a proposal, and you have a country that's dominated by people who are ready to lynch the Congress and the president, we have a very challenging role, which is we have to make sure that this mass strike phenomena doesn't become a 1789 French Revolution mass strike phenomena. And Lyndon LaRouche today referred to that time that you had the King of France had made himself the enemy of the people by the policies he adopted economically, starving the population. We have now a government which has made themselves the enemy of the people. But we don't want to destroy our government. We want to destroy the cause that generated this healthcare policy, and replace the president, hopefully with a adult supervision rather than what might have to occur, which would make it more complicated, and get going on what we need to do.
Well, let me ask you, in other words, you've raised another way to, we want to save the institutions, these unique institutions, and make them work. And so on your delineation of who and what the enemy is, do you want to develop that more? That's certainly either historically or present day, because there's also the enemy within people's minds, I guess, and then there's the enemy that's directly intervening, as we've seen with the hand of the literally sometimes British nationals on behalf of the kind of international financial gang.
Yeah, well, I think there's a justified anger throughout the country that people are realizing their life is at stake with this Obama health care plan, especially also women who are being threatened with the cessation of the high-technology mammogram standard procedures with Obama's plan.
Yeah, but let me just throw
people
one.
People like that
go ahead.
Have to be faced with now asking themselves, as you just referred, who's the enemy? Which is, with that justified rage, now realize that the healthcare policy is something which is a hellhound, a messenger of what is actually the deeper enemy, is the international monetary system. And the same monetary system that caused you to lose your future well-being by the fact that we just bailed out Wall Street in London for some $20 trillion since Bush's and Obama's continuation of the bailout policy. And that's the enemy. So the deeper question is what is the monetary system, and what is our basis for defeating it?
Right. So, well, one thing is we've got a collapsed. I also refer people to LaRouchePack.com. Many of our listeners regularly are looking at that at least twice a day for the off-the-cuff LPAC update. But this triple curve collapse function is right there on the top now of the graphic which LaRouche first devised when actually he was invited to speak about any forthcoming healthcare policy crises at the Vatican in Rome in 1995. And he said if the physical economic side of things declines while more money is in circulation and more financial valuations are going through the roof, eventually it's going to crash. So that's what we have on our hands. But do you want to delineate what it was there's a kind of hyperinflationary phase we've been going through, but it's just broken. It too has bust, right? The financial valuations are also, you can't keep up the myth, you can't keep them up anymore. Do you want to say something about the inherent nature of a monetary system versus a genuine credit system?
Yeah. Well, I think the question under discussion is, yeah, what is the solution to this madness? Mm-hmm. And counterposed to that hyperinflationary situation that you're describing. I would refer to people to watch a video currently on LaRouchePack. It should be featured either on the main page or on the credit page very soon, which is Rosa Luxemburg and the General Breakdown Crisis. And that video discusses what you're referring here, the triple curve, as a combination of hyperinflation and deflation based on the skyrocketing debt, which is in no way capable of being settled, and the accelerating collapse of the physical economy. Now, the question is, well, why are we submitted to this? What would groups that would come forward as a non-discredited group of patriots do right now in replacing the current Obama health care plan, current Obama policy in general, and get going with something that would work? Well, the basis for this is the American system of economics, which a lot of people in Congress, a lot of people listening to this call are familiar with, but some of the deeper implications of it and the way that we have to use it and utilize it as a weapon and a tool for development, I think we should get into some of the deeper aspects of that now. So what I begin with is to say that the intrinsic difference between monetary systems, which the final consequences of are the kind of value denominations that the healthcare policy is, which is to say that since we put money as the basis of our value, and we decide that something's valuable if it has something, if you can make money off of it, if it has a high rating in the market, if it has, if it will make you the bucks, then the consequence of that, which we're seeing today in the breakdown, is that you have people that are starting to put a value on human life, which the Obama healthcare policy is the epitome of, but it's simply the epitome of a system which is the final consequence is such a valuation. So the system itself has to be realized as the enemy, and that has to be replaced now with something else. Now the basis for that something else, which is the credit system, is a sovereign government taking into its own, taking under the wings of its authority as a sovereign government, the well-being of all of its people. And that was what Alexander Hamilton realized in 1779, 1781 as aide-de-camp to General Washington, that if we were going to take all the people under our now sovereign nation, which we were fighting for, under our wings, we would have to be able to provide for that, for their well-being, in the form of a development of a physical economy. And he was very well founded on that, and he realized that the implications of the Declaration of Independence, which said that we had all the rights of a sovereign, independent states would have rights to, that they, that those powers there, which were very general, implied very specific powers, which would be all related to economy. And so Alexander Hamilton had fought then from that point on through the successful establishment of the United States to create a government with the instruments such as a national bank credit system to carry out that kind of full, to provide for the population in general. And so it was with this, realizing that national government, national sovereign government, has to take the reins and realize that everything that had gone on before that of different money systems of Europe and different banking systems of Europe, that all had to be cast aside and deemed parasitical if it wasn't under the jurisdiction of government. All money that would be created would be something that only had value because the sovereign government, who is committed to its people, said that it had value. Otherwise, it has no value. And we can discuss why that's the case, get down and dirty with some of the specifics of the U.S. Constitution, where that's located, what the fight has been around that, even since the Articles of Confederation. But that's the one, that's one side of it. The other side of it that we can discuss is then, once you decide that sovereign government is going to be in control of money, and thereby turning it, in fact, into credit, there's a deeper question then of how are you going to think about using it as a tool for development of the physical economy.
Right. And let me ask, in line with what you're saying, let's leap ahead, then we can leap back. In what Hamilton himself wrote and what you wrote about him, of course he wrote a lot, fortunately, and he was a very powerful patriot. But the emphasis, if you think that what you're looking at is the expression is sometimes used of directed credit. In other words, or Lyndon LaRouche last on August 1st talked about having national missions. In other words, intervening in the actual physical economy. Would you say something about during Hamilton's time, you mentioned transportation, power, there were the New Jersey projects, I think the Passaic Falls, Paterson, New Jersey. And today, some people, if they think outside the confinements of having been around this money system collapse so long, also have visions of the kind of national missions we ought to have for the physical economic situation. But would you bring that out a bit more?
Yeah, it has to. We have to reject the inherent idea that money has some kind of value. And if we don't do that, different meetings around the country that are occurring on what kind of projects we want to build, they'll never get going if we don't do that. Right now, it's a perfect opportunity to be discussing this because, obviously, that kind of system is totally discredited. The people are up in arms the fact that they're losing everything. And we can turn the discussion over to, well, then what's the solution? And people want to hear it. And it therefore provides us in discussing the solution to get deep into the axioms. And the main axioms that you want to get into are why money stinks, and the money that's being currently going around is getting smellier and smellier because it actually reeks of the death of future generations. Because, as you said, the real use of money, and which should be under the control of Congress, is for enacting and fulfilling a future goal. And I think you're referring these different projects, but there should be a sense that there's a mission for the future, and anything that you're going to put down in terms of a current, you're going to allocate for something in the immediate term should be something that we're going to do to fulfill a long-term goal. Because the nature of the human species is to think about its not just its current generation that it has around it, its current litter, as a mother pig would, or a dog or a cat, and might in the case of animals might try to fend off that current litter, but realize that we have a role here on the planet and in the solar system for promoting and overseeing the development of everything that everything that's there, managing resources, creating new resources, and managing the development of the human species. And that kind of thinking is actually the basis for a new credit system today. Because as Lim and LaRouche referred today in discussion with associates, in this day and age, if we're going to have a new credit system, it won't come about nationally unless it's done internationally. And that means that we would have to have nations come together and realize that it is to their benefit to sign on to a credit system that would initially be based on our constitutional credit ability, which we should and will discuss more. But they would sign on for it because they would have determined what physical projects they need in China, what physical development projects they need in Russia in terms of water, power, etc. In India and in the U.S., we would come together and then be able to establish a basis for the value of the currencies of the nations based on the differences in the physical economies of each respective country, and that each sovereign nation would get together and we would establish an authority for a new credit system based on that kind of collaboration among sovereign nations. And it would be based on a future-oriented type approach. And that's what Lim and LaRouche is ready to sit down. Some of his associates and collaborators are ready to sit down and actually work out how the new international system would work. So it's not going to be based on it's not going to be based on now individual nations setting up their own credit systems. However, it is going to be based on understanding the legacy of the U.S. credit system, which we can go more into.
Right, and then what you just said comprehends also the question of currencies. Instead of the mad situation now, the idea of the value of a currency can come out in mutually shared agreements internationally and domestically with this intent, future-oriented intent, to have mutual development, right? However fast or slow, but to get on with it.
Yeah.
And so, well, you mentioned many things. Do you want to, on the constitutionality question, I don't know if you want to get into that now. There is, it often comes up, I think you've referred to it yourself, as you might, some people are completely against the Federal Reserve, but they get into this, we can't have big government. They get into that self-confined, dead-end ideological thinking, whereas you've talked about there's a paradox of government, that when the government is carrying out its in the American system, Hamiltonian tradition, its responsibility and sovereign responsibility and intention to contribute to the general good, then that's what happens. It's the big government is an irrelevant terminology. So what about the constitutionality that people should know?
Right. I mean, right now we can make use of some of the populist rage against the Federal Reserve,
Okay.
but we shouldn't get caught up into the people that are actually pushing it, like Ron Paul, who's avidly against government, who says free trade is good. And that's the typical misunderstanding with people who are against the Federal Reserve is the question of government and therefore credit, because it's still. What needs to be understood is the question of what money is and what it is not, and what's the difference of money and credit. Because if we want to replace the Federal Reserve, we want to get rid of this thing as unconstitutionally indebting the United States, replace it with a national bank. The purpose of such a banking system has to be clear. So let me just say that what we had before the United States was set up under Hamilton, we had something that was converging. We had a legacy of a credit system under Cotton Mather and then Ben Franklin in earlier times, but we didn't have the ability to coordinate all the states of the Union as one intention, and therefore, economically speaking, we didn't have the resources to manage the whole country as one breathing, living body with a beating heart that would be able to distribute blood to its different parts. And so Hamilton realized you needed certain powers of government to be able to do that. That's when the credit system becomes something you can now discuss. Because we had already had under the Articles of Confederation, we had a part of it that said, the power to emit bills of credit, to emit bills on the credit of the United States. Now, in the Constitutional Convention, that was debated, and you had James Madison and others who were opposed to keeping in the Constitution the phrase in Article 1, Section 8, the power to issue bills on the credit of the United States. And issue emit bills and borrow money. What you had was instead that was voted against, and they decided to keep the clause in to borrow on the credit of the United States. But they did strike out emit bills. So in Article 1, Section 8, what was maintained was to borrow money on the credit of the United States. And really what that meant was that was sort of the That was something that would have been implied already in the preamble, because having sovereignty over your own currency, which is something that it was that's already implied in having a sovereign government. But in that location, then we maintain this creditability. But what we also had was different powers that allowed us to then set up a full functioning credit system with a national bank. And the idea of the national bank was to be able to have something that would provide the means between collection of taxes, creating this credit, and all the other powers there listed in Article 1, Section 8, to be able to regulate and build up now a sovereign currency that was a reflection of the physical value of the economy. So the currency and all the money is all related and all can only be created through acts of Congress of emitting a bill of credit and sending that bill of credit to the Treasury and saying, you can monetize that bill of credit in the Treasury. Now the Treasury can send that money to the National Bank, and now the National Bank can make loans to other national banks around the country, and provide the means for all the economic projects that we have. That's how the system works, and that was a system that was fought over for a long time. It was then Lincoln who established a national currency after we had the breakdown in that system with Jackson's treasonous action of taking down the not of vetoing the charter for the Third National Bank in 1832. And this was still a hotly debated issue, even as far as 1884. I found a Supreme Court case which discussed people who still did not want to take the U.S. Treasury notes as valid and wanted to return to a monetary system. You have John Quincy Adams, who in 1832, the year that the bank was vetoed by Jackson, he made a speech and directly cited the point that the intention by Jackson, Van Buren, the other people who were working at that time taking down the bank, in taking it down and distributed all the money in the Second National Bank to state banks around the country, was to return to a monetary system. And he actually said to return to a metallic currency. And so this issue was very clear to the founders, was very clear later on, has been still a fight of whether or not we're going to rely on some metallic currency which has inherent value, and you have to have this money. The money is what has value, versus when you have a sovereign government that says, I'm going to just issue credit, create credit in my government, right? In our constitution, it's in the Congress. And that it has inherent value. It doesn't have value because we're saying, well, we as a government are going into debt, and then some bank's going to give us money, and now we can build stuff. But in fact, the government doesn't go into debt to anybody. The government creates debt for the purpose of the population. And all of money only has value because it's created by the government. So that essential point is something that anybody who wants to get rid of the Federal Reserve has to realize, that we're not dealing with replacing some monetary system, some bankrupt bank, with some other bank. And yet, this bank's just corrupt. The Federal Reserve then is corrupt. We need a new bank. But no, we have to replace it by returning to a national bank where everything is governed by the intention of the government. And if we're going to go into debt, it's not going to be to somebody else. We're going in, and we're creating valid debt, because it's not money anymore. In a sense, we're not going into debt receiving money from, right now, what you have the Fed selling bonds on the market and making money off these bonds and giving it to the U.S. Treasury, and then the U.S. Treasury going into debt to the market. No, we're going to wipe out the values of the derivatives markets, wipe out the values of the international monetary system, and create credit. So if there's some more questions on how all that works, we can discuss that. But that's then the basis now to form an international monetary system, take that principle of sovereign government credit for projects, and start to utilize the authority of the fact that we were successful under Hamilton. We were successful afterwards until the takedown of the Second National Bank. We were successful under Lincoln in actually replacing what before was a stranglehold system of usury with an actually, in fact, operating credit system.
Right, thanks. In other words, you've kind of recapped moments of real going from Hamilton's vision of government, as you called it in the paper you wrote 2 years ago, from that wartime period, that it would be sovereign. That so you had the first national bank from up to around 1811, and then the second one chartered in 1816, and then you just described in the 1830s was this enemy operation that to get President Jackson to veto it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people don't know. People are Lyndon LaRouche at the end of his last webcast said this. You know, hey, we don't know London and Wall Street this money. We just need a government that's willing to say that.
Right.
But you go all the way to Jackson, and you have people in the Congress that submitted in Jackson's time in the 1820s, 1829, 30, 31, where Jackson is wailing that the National Bank is this horrible monster that's going to eat all of its children. And you have people who submitted to that, say we have to appease the president. And the president vetoed it. And they didn't have the guts to realize that where their authority came from because of this real disease of monetarism, which gets to the deeper point of why society would accept value as in some physical object rather than the intention of government to carry out what it wants to do for its people. It doesn't have to have some kind of object to do that, right? And wouldn't it make sense if you fought a revolution against a government, against a tyranny, wouldn't that make the sense that you'd have the power to provide for anything you wanted to do if you were taking the reins away from a king and a parasite government which is based in England at the time? Wouldn't it make sense that you'd be able to do anything you want in terms of the monetary system?
Right. So that context counts, along with the long influence I'm sure you've mentioned or you've written about of Leibniz and others. You know what I mean? Deliberate intervention of the mind. So what we're confronted with is the present-day very degraded culture, except everything's up for grabs now. People are mad. But otherwise, they've gone along with allowing this tyrannical usurpation of our what should be our sovereign right to have our own credit system. Instead, we have this crazy monetary stuff. I just want to point out, you especially have done some ridicule videos. That's one way to call them. When you, and I refer people to the roofpack.com website on the global credit system section. You've done two on the religion of usury, the invisible hand, and another one. But you're talking about really to the historical extreme, the people that are right around Obama now, or a man you had on there named Alan Krueger. Isn't he the chief economics advisor to the Federal Reserve? Could you say something about that? Those people, that gang?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they typify the worst of what is actually a general misunderstanding throughout the entire population.
Uh-huh.
So nobody's going to escape culpability here. And we're bearing the shame of our earlier generations in not having ejected from social acceptance empiricism, which is what these people reflect.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Krueger apparently, to my horror, I found out today, actually has a Jeremy Bentham-style hedonic calculus proposal that would put a computer chip in everybody and measure their amount of pleasure and pain. And just as Jeremy Bentham's proposal, you know, for the greatest good of the greatest number, if you could just calculate what policy, economic policy, gave the people the most sensual pleasure, then you wouldn't need government anymore. You could just have a computer that would calculate economic policy. But this is actually, and I was going to put out something as a form of ridicule, but this is actually true. This is what Alan Krueger has put forward in so many words. So, no, what these folks are, behaviorists, which are behind the Obama healthcare plan, saying, you know, the problem of the collapse of the whole international financial system since the 70s, which has now come down, is actually your fault because you've been too greedy and we need to change your behavior. But what we're going to do is we're going to put all these guys in the basement for their bad behavior, and the people are very angry. No, what this goes back to is Adam Smith's theory of moral sentiments in 1759, who after that went to France, picked up these physiocratic doctrines, among other things he was doing, for Shelburne, who was essentially the organizer of the new policy of free trade for America. And Adam Smith then created this book called Wealth of Nations, which is still praised and honored throughout the entire U.S. and international university system to the day. anyone who has a degree in economics has to first say that their whole system is going to be based on this. And what it's really based on, the Wealth of Nations, that is actually on the philosophical foundation found in the theory of moral sentiments. Now, what I showed in that video that you referred to is that Adam Smith is, in fact, Cartesian in the way that he's expressing the role of a human being in relation to the economy. Now, that's what you're referring to. The behaviorist crowd, they actually all write treatises on saying that the foundation for behaviorist economics is Adam Smith's theory of moral sentiments. And this gets at the deeper question that we're actually dealing with when we talk about the reason why people would have submitted to Jackson taking down the National Bank.
Okay.
And the reason why why monetarism has to be, well, monetarism is an underlying the hereditary disease in why the current government and others are not able to get off their hind legs and say, here's what we have to do. Now, the reason for that is that the role of man is central to government. Wouldn't that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
The role of man and what would be unique about man would actually be part and parcel to having government work, since it's government for men and not animals. So if you're going to have government that's based on human beings and not animals, and providing for human beings and not providing for animals, you have to realize a unique role of the mind of man. And this is what Adam Smith's economics, called free trade, rules out completely. Because Adam Smith says that, well, you know, mankind's really no different than a clock. And all we do is we go after our immediate, we sort of tick. Like, parts of a clock don't think about what time says on the clock hand.
Hmm.
Parts of the clock just think about the fact that they're ticking. And so they don't have to think about the final cost, what Smith says. They just have to think about the efficient cost. And that was Descartes' doctrine. And the whole book of Smith reflects Descartes. We don't have time to go through that now. People can watch the video. But what that says is that you know, all you have to do is carry out your, you know, sensual desires, your impulses, and that's actually what economics is. It's just sort of maximizing that pleasure pain, being greedy, making money, and somehow that's going to carry out the good of all. And free trade, you know, will work, because if everybody just carries out their own selfish interests, then you know, then there's an invisible hand which is going to make everything work. And that's really as complicated as you need to go. But the whole thing's a fraud that was created on behalf of the British Empire so that people would submit their economies to be continued to be looted, even though we just had this this revolution.
Right. Well, actually, and I mean, people know that, of course, the paychecks even exist in some archive, don't they, that the British East India Company paid for this propaganda for the gullible. And in fact, the what you wrote about Alexander Hamilton and then later Henry Carey, various people in the who defended, developed, and wrote about the American system in opposing the British East India Company, one, they brought out different aspects of this opposition to the empire, where if you have a monetary system, nominally you might be encouraged, if you're a farmer, to grow something, but you might be told to grow indigo 1 year and cotton 3 years from now. In other words, potential chaos is always there, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really like, what do we want to do?
Okay.
As a government? And that's all you need to think about. You don't need to think about any considerations of what's going to make the most money this year and that. And again, the failure is to say, well, what's the role of government if government's based on the unique nature of man? So Smith didn't understand that. He was pushing his empiricist doctrine and saying, you know, look, you don't have to think. But the real unique nature of man, which Alexander Hamilton understood, and which is the basis for report on manufacturers to the Congress is that the main measurement for economic value for an economy is actually the increase in the productive powers of labor, which are reflections of discoveries made by people applied to the different infrastructure and production in the form of increased technology. And that's the basis. And right now we're faced with, if we're going to have a new international credit system, we need to worry about resources and we're to carry out all the things we need. And we have to understand which are the most crucial resources for mankind, which are the most, the elements, chemical elements, other ones that are byproducts of living processes, figure out which ones are scarce, which ones we need, which ones we might need to go to other planet, asteroids, planets, and things like that to get, not for only our own population, but for expanding into the solar system, and really model out then allocations for a credit system based on that kind of wide-spanning mission. So the basis of it is to say, okay, if we know that human creativity is something unique to humans, and the characteristic of, therefore, economies is a process which is guided by human creativity, the government has to be able to be basically the shepherd for that kind of flock, you could say. It has to be something that's going to guide, be able to service and provide for human creativity to do what it needs to do, which is basically, in the, practically speaking, always be able to provide for the scientific side of an economy and to create the infrastructure production that will meet the standards of carrying out the project so we can provide for the population to make further breakthroughs.
That raises one, can I just throw in one question that came in advance from somebody in Iowa, was just asking you about the period of Alexander Hamilton, because you had mentioned the steam, Papin, an earlier steam engine development, but Robert Fulton, there's a Mr. Romney who was very involved in the early years of the nation. So power was quite a deliberate concern. They just ask you about that. Mm-hmm. And that's the case in light of what you're just saying, right?
Well, these are all the exciting things that you get into once you start to think about physics instead of money.
Okay.
Yeah, because now you start to get think about the real paradoxes that are facing human beings, and if a government was run by people that took that as primary rather than their fear of Wall Street, they would take up these kind of paradoxes, such as how are we going to leap up to the next form of power? And the steam engine was a revolution. If you read Sadie Carnot's book, which you can find online, what he talks about the steam engine, this is a complete transformation of the least action pathway of transportation of, you know, of everything, and therefore represented a higher order of the economy. And if you were a congressman at that time, If you were not going to provide for research and application of that new principle, steam power, you'd have been an idiot, right?
Yeah, well, I've seen some today, but
so today, what we're faced with, what Lyndon LaRouche is calling for, is actually a program to colonize the solar system, and we can reflect back today, if Apollo 11, 40 years ago, that, as John Kennedy said, we could have got to Mars by 1984, put a man on Mars. We're going to have to do things a little bit differently right now. But the idea is we have to think about what's required to set up a colony for the moon, mining the moon, and creating fusion propulsion to bring people to Mars within a few days, and then all the benefits of science and everything that will be obtained from that. But the whole point, the purpose is to move forward in science, to move constantly, always breaking the boundaries of what society can do. But it also meets the practical needs, which are, if we don't progress in science, if we don't get fusion power, We're looking at an entropic collapse of the current world population, which is facing all sorts of problems because of a lack of application of nuclear power and related technologies.
Right.
So you're an idiot right now if you're a congressman. The ones that aren't hiding the holes. Well, we can still talk to them. If they're not moving for the most advanced missions, all the things we would have found out if we would have continued from where the space program was, those things would all be able to be applied to the economy.
Right. Well, in closing, I want we only have a little less than 5 minutes, and please reiterate anything you want, but I want to pass along to you a bit of the question from Adam, Mr. R, Adam R, because he thanks you and others for beating back Obama's Nazi healthcare policy, he calls it. But then he said, my question concerns the situation at hand, the oncoming collapse in October, and the impact and so forth, but I'm compressing this. He says, how do you see this current administration is utterly doomed, but how do you see this playing out? If the cabal currently surrounding Obama are not told to scat, as LaRouche may put it, then how might they continue to impose their fascist policies, or do you see any of them being impeached? Would Vice President Biden do any better with these clowns around him? I'm just going to leave it at that, or how would sane advisors start to listen to Lynn? I guess he wants you to...
Right.
There you go.
Well, the thing is, you don't want to look at the people necessarily as objects. It's the same way people had, I remember people thinking, well, who cares? If we get rid of Dick Cheney, there's still a bunch of people around. But yeah, the process that would lead to these people being removed would be such that would sort of cut off any influence these guys are going to still have. The main thing right now is the whole system is coming down, as you referenced, and unless that the main thing we have to do achieve by early September is actual recognition and adoption of Lyndon LaRouche's Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. Reverse the bailout. Stop any evictions, keep people in their homes, and shut down this crazy bailout policy, and start to enact in the discussion of the real leadership in Washington, D.C. and around the country that will come in and take over, how we're going to work out a new international credit system. And that's where we have to get going. I'll also address the same question. A different question that came from South Dakota, which is
okay.
What kind of proposal we need for to discuss with leaders, current leaders of Congress, out there. That everything has to be put in the context of we can use the fact this failed healthcare policy. Again, it goes back to Adam's question. This failed healthcare policy has created a situation where the monetary system is totally it's lost all credibility. So it gives us the ability to discuss an international credit system. We really want to keep things at that level, because if you try to get someone to do something smaller for any local area, etc., we know that these leaders in Congress, they have to take on the fact that they have to provide a solution to their constituents. The only thing that's going to stop the rage is when the constituents see that leader actually knows what the hell they're talking about, because they're not going to listen to that leader if they can smell the fact that he's bullshitting them. And what the solution is they have to be committed to joining with LaRouche to go with a credit system, alternative to the American system, but on an international scale, working out now what we have to do. So we have to immediately do the Homeowners Bank Protection Act. So getting that worked out by September, that's going to be the thing. The Obama administration, this whole group is discredited, and the issue now is to make sure that redirect the mass strike phenomena toward the solution of the current world crisis, which people can find more on reachpack.com in the coming days.
Absolutely.
Videos on that, and also again, I'd refer people to the video on Rosa Luxemburg and the triple curve.
Yeah, look at that. It just came up August 7th, and we're out of time, but I also give the toll-free number for Michael Kirsch's website, 800-929-7566. For those of you connecting in that way by phone or listening by phone, 800-929-7566. And next week, August 15th, will be Harley Schlanger on the show. I thank Michael Kirsch for being with us today and ask you to listen. We're every week from 3 to 4. Eastern Time in the United States on LaRouchePub.com. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you for the August 8th, 2009 LaRouche Show. Thank you very much, Michael.